This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 699. I would love to say that we have announced our first guest for our second show at the Nerdist Podcast Live at San Diego Comic-Con. The first show being Peter Capaldi and Sir Ben Kingsley. That's at the 7:30 or 8 o'clock show, 7:30 show at the Balboa Theater, Saturday of Comic-Con. The Late Show, our first guest that we're announcing is Maisie Williams.
What?
From the Game of Thrones.
What if she pulls her face off and it's not her all along?
Don't. Stop it.
I'm just saying.
No, but that we can't talk about the show without...
I didn't say any spoiler stuff. I just said a thing that's happened. The characters. It's a magical class. You can talk about magical classes.
All right. All right.
The many-faced god does lots of stuff.
Anyway, she's rad, and she's someone that is really funny on social media.
Oh yeah,
and I think I was so excited when she agreed to do the show.
She's hilarious.
So that's our first guest, and hopefully we'll be able to announce a second guest soon.
That first podcast, there's going to be two men with the jaunty laughs. At some point, they're going to laugh in unison, and the charm meter is just going to explode.
Yeah, that's sort of a British sploosh factor.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, no, and you just sort of melt.
I've been looking for that word.
Charm.
Sploosh was it. Thank
yeah.
you.
No,
I've been
welcome.
Looking for the right
yeah,
word
you know.
For that.
Hey, I'm here to help you.
You're my sploosh the thesaurus.
I'm making it Kyle.
Back to back.
I'm making it Kyle.
Making it Kyle.
Yeah. Do you have something you want to pronounce?
I do. This is a fun one. It's for the people of New York City. The Planned Parenthood of New York City is doing a safe sex and informational thing called Summer Sex and Spirits. And it's all about sexual health, and it's also got a lot of fun, like stuff, you know, raffles, and it just looks like a really fun and cool event that I wanted to support there because I like the work that they do.
Fantastic.
Oh, that event's on July 14th. I should say the date.
Yes. It's very helpful. Otherwise, you're not doing anyone any good,
that's
Kyle.
Super true.
All right.
I want to remind people to listen to some of our other podcasts, like The Todd Glass Show, which he's had some really fun guests lately. And producer Aristotle said that the Andy Kindler episode, which was a two-parter, he laughed so hard that he was sore the next day.
That's fine, but I want you to tell Todd to start playing more music.
Todd has started calling Aristotle Jet Ski, too, which was pretty satisfying as a nickname.
Oh, I want to promote a movie that I saw that I really loved called Creep.
Ooh, I've heard that's good.
It's really good. It's Patrick Bright directed, and he's in it with Mark Duplass. And it's fantastic.
Did you see that VOD or through your fancy Hardwick ways to see it?
I saw it through VOD. I got it on iTunes.
I've been dying to see it.
It's only like an hour and 17 minutes long. It's great. And they're actually going to come on the podcast soon to talk about it. But really great movie. People should see. Just I don't have any stake in it. Just saw it, liked it, thought it was fun. And so, you know, because Lydia and I watch every horror, everything that comes out.
I like this Lydia bringing this side of you out. I feel like her and I need to throw down on horror movies sometime.
Oh, yeah. It's
a pretty active lifestyle. When you then it said spring, I was like, oh, Lydia knows her shit.
Yeah. Yeah, she does. And it's one that it's a machine that just keeps cranking out.
That's the best part of it. It never stops.
Yeah. And the bummer part is like just going to iTunes and being like, oh, we've seen all these already. Oh, we need more. It Follows finally just came out on VOD.
Have you not seen it yet?
No, I missed it. When is it? Yes.
That's my movie of the year.
Well, I pre-ordered it like 2 months ago, I finally just got the notification that I can download it today.
You are going to love it.
I know. Amazing. Everyone says it's great. This episode is Cameron Esposito, who also was in the Nerdist Stand-Up Cluster.
And is also a delight and a treasure.
She's so fantastic. And
I got
so,
a little misty listening to this episode.
Well, she's
It gets real poignant and beautiful. Like, she's
super funny and very passionate and very cool and very human.
It's
and
beautiful stuff.
Her podcast live show, Put Your Hands Together, is
which I just did.
You did it?
I did it 2 weeks ago.
It's at UCB Franklin every Tuesday. And then her album is called Same Sex Symbol. And you should pick that up.
It's great.
Here's another podcast number 699 with Cameron Esposito.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I don't do laundry willy-nilly.
You kid down at You still use a washboard.
I use a washboard. I bet you that picked up on the mic. For my jug band.
Yes.
And also for my clothing.
Yeah, your right arm is just ripped.
Yeah, it's super ripped from that. And also, you know, the moonshine. And, yeah.
Yeah, the blindness.
Can't check that Kentucky, huh, Chris?
No. There's a show on Destination America. I think it's Destination America.
This might be the channel you watch the most.
It's got the weirdest shows. There's like some hillbilly technology show where they...
No, newly equals.
So I gotta say, you know, we had a lot of foresight when we booked you for this day several weeks ago.
I mean,
we knew we had an in with the government.
I was gonna ask who's your justice on the inside,
Scalia. And
I thought it was gonna be Kagan for sure.
And so I'm doing Kagan exercises right now. And we knew that today would be the day that the Supreme Court would federally recognize same-sex unions.
I mean, I already said to these dudes, I'm gonna cry. Like, I'm gonna cry on the show. I'm gonna.
That's
cry.
Fine.
You haven't
that's
had
fine.
A cry ever?
I don't. No. I don't think so.
No.
Wow, seriously, never?
No one's cried on this show.
You know why? Because gay marriage wasn't legal until...
Right.
Now we can just let it out!
I mean, it is weird. You guys have been sobbing since I saw you.
Yes, that's true, yeah.
I wonder if there are gay people who have been using that for the longest time. Like, I mean, I would love to get married, but you know, the government, and now... Yeah. Now it's like, wait, what happened?
Yeah. I think that's a real thing. I also think that... You know what is driving me crazy are the gay divorce jokes that people are already making on Twitter and stuff. It's like, just give us like one day before like...
What gay divorce jokes?
Is this joke, which people have been making since the beginning of...
I'm listening. Let's go.
It's the joke like... Welcome. Good luck. Yeah, you can get married. Good luck. Marriage is terrible. You're going to get divorced anyway.
All the gay divorces next year. That's the one I've
wonder
been
when that's going to be legal. Yeah. It's so...
But you know what? It's all money for the government. It's fine.
Also, like, absolutely there will be gay divorces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're just divorces.
Yeah, they'll just be divorces.
Yeah.
Because
you can't possibly be as many as straight divorces.
Not in the slightest. Yeah. There was a long time ago, it was weird if you met a kid whose parents were divorced, and now it's like, your parents are still together?
Yeah.
Like,
I get that.
And I think at this point, like, we've had to spend so much time, like, deciding if we were okay with ourselves and finding a partner. Like, I think the gay divorce rate will be right up there with the gay abortion rate.
How did that happen? Get it out!
Oh, no! It was so close to Thanksgiving. I dropped the
what
poster.
A waste of money.
I think they're called gay-bortions, right?
Gay-bortions.
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 I loved her in The Rescuers. Yeah. She's great in The Rescuers.
Couldn't rescue that baby.
Come on.
No.
Where? Down under.
What? Is she still alive?
No.
I think she is.
She lost her leg, remember?
Like, oh, that's right.
She died.
I thought she bit the dust.
Hey, find out if Zsa Gabor is alive.
That was a whole thread the first time Kevin Smith was on the podcast.
We were wondering what happened to her leg.
I said, what if Zsa, because she had one of her legs amputated, and I said, what if Zsa means leg in her language? And then
now she's just, still alive, see?
What?
Wow.
Still alive and still kicking while sitting down.
Oh. Did she lose a leg?
It's 98 degrees.
Yeah, she did, yeah.
To what?
I think they had amputated for something.
Or diabetes?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, part of her was like, you can continue, but I'm gone. The leg was like, I'm done.
So there's a lot of leg divorces?
No more coochie coochie.
She just has like a fur.
In 2011, her record was amputated.
False.
Oh.
So that might not even be her fault.
Right.
Well,
I think it's anybody's fault when you get an infection.
Daddy, I have an infection. It's your fucking fault.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what happens.
Jonah and I are close friends, but I always find his stance on amputees like pretty offensive.
Yeah, if it happens,
like, you chose this.
You chose this. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's not my fault.
And some people are like, I was born this way, or this happened to me over time because of some sort of collision.
Yeah.
You're like,
then it's not your fault.
You chose
But it could be.
Yeah, you chose it.
It could be.
You have a hard line on that.
By the way, I do. I'll take a hard
stance.
Hearing the
phrase, your stance on amputations, sounds funny.
No, you're right. Yeah. You're
it's
right.
Wobbly, but it holds.
Your hand stance on arm amputation is a real problem.
But this was, I agonized for like an hour this morning because I wanted to put something on Instagram of the Nerdist logo with a rainbow pattern on it, and I couldn't.
I always think about that, Brandon. That's what I love about you. Chris.
No, it's not. It's just to let people
know.
So shut up and stop being a jerk. So let me just say it. Let me say a sincere thing without your dumb bullshit getting in the way.
Hey, don't treat me like Matt.
Huh?
I make one Matt
joke. Stop acting like Matt.
Well, I mean, I'll just say, as like the queer person in the room, I did notice that both At Midnight and Nerdist have rainbow. Icons on all of your shit, and so it matters.
Yeah, so I just, you know, I wanted to put it out of the Instagram, but I couldn't find I wanted to put a background, but the background kept. So, like, basically, I took the equality sign and I put that in the background, but then it was just too busy. And then I tried to put clouds in the background. I'm like, why doesn't it make any sense at all? So then I put like clouds in the background with the sun beaming through, and I'm like, well, that's too on the nose. Like, I couldn't find the right.
What did you land on anything?
I didn't land on anything
yet. I didn't land the sun beaming through, and then the beam is landing on me and my future.
Wait,
just standing
Chris,
down there.
What if
aliens.
The triangle, but instead of the laser beam thing, the two marriage equality lines?
Right, or you make the triangle pink, and then that's actually already a gay symbol used by as great a people as
just,
the Nazis.
Yeah, turn it upside down.
That's really a good idea.
Turn it upside down.
As great a people.
No. Do you think, just if it's big enough, and then just the two, the marriage equality lines inside.
Yeah, but it's, how do I connect them to the thing? It will look weird. Like, it won't.
You have to
how do you connect it to the triangle?
How do you connect it to the laser beam without it looking? It's not going to.
No laser beam. Just the triangle.
No. What if you have the. I don't know why we're discussing this now, but.
It's really important.
What if you have. You know how the beam goes out to the the shine?
Yeah.
Whatever we'll call that. The glare of the laser beam. Why don't you just replace the glare
with two women?
Two women
scissoring.
Yeah. Or
which,
by the way, does create
quite a bit of glare.
You put that on Instagram,
it's
right?
Very juicy.
And then on Twitter, two dudes docking.
I'm not really sure that. That would be taken the right way?
No, I think
as a straight man, that might, like, if I were a gay woman, I could do that, and people would be like, that's rad. As a straight dude, I think it would look like, what are you doing?
Well,
I'd have a problem
docking.
With it.
Yeah. But you recommended it.
No, but that's the thing. You should have a picture of Cameron that says, I'm Cameron Esposito, and I approve of this message.
But then also, the two women are both me. So two tiny me's. Sometimes guys ask you this question all the time when you're a lesbian. Not just me, many lesbians have told me this. Guys will ask us all the time, like, how do you leave your house because you have boobs?
Right.
And you're into boobs. Mm-hmm. Which is this a question that everybody at the table has?
No,
I've heard.
My feeling is that, I mean, boobs are rad, but I think vaginas are pretty great too.
Yeah, also, I mean, like, because you have to make money eventually.
Well, it's also the
and
same.
And you get hungry. Like, there's a lot of reasons.
It's the same way.
Like, what are you actually talking about in this situation?
I mean, if I can leave the house with the capability of masturbating, then you can leave the house with boobs.
That's what I'm saying.
But I feel like, was that an L.A. story? I feel like there was a, I feel like Steve Martin said that in a movie somewhere. He was like, oh, I just, you know, I couldn't be a woman. I would just sit at home and play with my breasts all day.
You know what? I think it is an L.A. story.
I think it might be an L.A. story. I don't know. I'm not that. I mean, yeah, again, I think boobs are cool, but I'm not a dude who's like, look at all the tits. Like, I just don't think that.
I wish you were that guy. Look at them all.
Who was that guy when he saw Total Recall? When he saw Total Recall, that's what he said.
Yo, there's three tits.
Look at all those tits.
I mean, you could fit an extra one in there if you tried.
I mean, if you're a woman who's at my particular area on the sexuality spectrum, there was a point in my life when I felt betrayed by my own breasts. So I get the fuck out of the house so as to leave them behind.
Betrayed. Yeah.
Well, because like I was a little kid and loved being kind of androgynous, mm-hmm. and had like a coonskin cap that I wore all the time, and was like only I had a.
You just kind of still have one.
Yeah. I know.
You loved being androgynous as a 11-year-old in 1955.
Right. So you got on your radio flyer.
Right. Well, I got this Dakota ring, and it said you're a lesbian.
Put the slingshot in your back pocket.
Right. Yeah. And. No, I just had like a weird little bull cut and all these things that were like riding this. I was like really into Robin Hood, you mm-hmm. know.
Yeah.
Then suddenly I had this body that when I, you know, because I lived in an area where I didn't know that gay people existed. When my body showed up, I was just like, what is this? Because this is not in line with where I find myself in the world. Mm-hmm. Like having a woman's body felt really difficult for a really long time because it wasn't at all. Because then I didn't know where I fit because I was like, well, wait a minute. But like, I still want to collect Kens, not Barbies. So like, what does this mean?
So when did you get comfortable with it? Did you have to meet other lesbians and they go, you know, this is fine?
Yeah, I actually am into you specifically because of your body. Because that's what a lesbian is. Honestly, I think it was when I kissed a woman for the first time. Because I dated guys. I dated guys in like high school and early college very seriously. I had like really serious boyfriends. And that whole time I was very uncomfortable with myself. I had like a lot of body issues and like eating issues and a lot of just like really skin crawling, like my own skin crawling when dudes would touch me. I just couldn't figure out what was going on. Then when I was with a woman and I appreciated her body, like as I got to understand how awesome I thought her body was, I could see that she liked my body and it made me like myself for the
first
time.
That's really, really interesting. I mean, I feel like I've known women who have never really been super, like, who hate their own bodies and who have never been comfortable with a dude. But I just feel like it's not my place to go, maybe there might be another option for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for women, it's very confusing. For good or for bad, when you were a guy in your youth, everybody tells you that you are gay, whether you are gay or not.
Right. Sure.
And some guys are gay and then they are told that they're gay. And then some straight guys are like constantly patrolled to find like any little thing in you that might be gay. If you're a woman, the parameters for behavior for women is like they're so kind of loose that I don't actually know that it helps queer women to understand what we are. Like, you can be a woman and have a sleepover with your best friend in high school, which I did all the time. My best friend in high school, she was the youngest of 8 kids. And there were 7 empty bedrooms. All of her family members had left the house by the time she was in high school. There were 7 empty bedrooms at her house because she was from a wealthy family. And then 2 guest bedrooms. And every time I would sleep over there, I would choose to sleep in her bed, in her bedroom with her. And I have, like, this very specific memory of her mom being like, Cameron, do you want to like sleep in any of the guest bedrooms? And I was just like, no, shut the door. But I didn't understand that was different because like,
well,
women, that's totally normal.
You're really right about that.
Especially
what you said about how young men are it's almost like they're hazed with sexuality.
Yes.
I remember, I apologize for the word I'm about to use, but it's just the word that was used at me a lot. But when, even to the extent where you used to wear these shirts and they had these little loops in the back that you would hang shirts on, and people called them fag tags.
Still do.
And so they would come around.
You're hanging out at middle schools?
They would come around, I remember, and then like yank it, like try to rip it off and go, fag tag.
Yeah.
And it's like, I never even understood. I'm like, what is the origin of that? What does that mean? Why? You know?
Absolutely.
It's where kids in the UK would keep their cigarettes.
What was wild about that is that was happening to straight guys who I'm sure felt very uncomfortable being called that word. And it was also happening to your queer classmates who really were gay, and people were also throwing that word at them. So guys have like this really weird experience of everybody is put down, and some people it's true for them, and then some people it's not true for them, but it's still this huge point of shame. And so like as a group, all men are spending a lot of the rest of their lives getting over being called this.
Yeah, I questioned it when I was young because I didn't, you know, as sort of like a weird nerdy kid who was not popular and didn't have the option of really dating girls until I got older, and then getting that, especially growing up in the South and getting like, ooh, this bag over here, you know, like it kind of made me go like, oh, I honestly didn't have any way to really understand or test it, or I didn't know. But it was definitely used as a shaming tool or an attack or I mean, just maybe that's just generalized bullying, and I don't know.
I think it is generalized bullying, but I also think it's specific to guys. So the other side of that is that for women, I really think like most women grow up believing that lesbians are not a real thing. Like, so guys are growing up thinking like, oh God, what if I'm this one thing that everybody's telling me I might be and it would be terrible? And then women are growing up being like, well, the only option is to have a husband. And so I think it's as confusing in a different way where you're taught kind of in a blanket way that you're straight. Like,
but don't
all
you
women
think
are kind of taught
are,
that
you,
they're straight.
Do you feel, especially in college, don't you feel that women are more open to at least experiment, like just like trying?
Sure, but then some of that, and that kind of started, you know, like in the 90s or 2000s. Like before that, that wasn't really a thing in terms of the like titillating. But you know, but that's sexuality for men too. That's a performance. Like girls kissing girls at a party has nothing to do with sexuality.
Not that. I just mean sort of like what you said, how girls can have sleepovers and sleep in the same bed and no one questions it. But as your hormones are developing, wouldn't you be more apt to just be like, oh, this kind of feels good. Let's, you know.
I don't know. I mean, I can only speak from my own experience, and I was a little limited in kind of speaking to generalized female experience because I went to Catholic grade school, high school, and college. So my experience was very within this world that like homosexuality didn't really exist, and it was a choice and it was a sin. So like women that I knew weren't experimenting because it was fun, because it was something that you wouldn't do because it would be sinful.
Right.
So I'm sure that does exist, that like, is this fun? You know, I'm sure that that is out there, but it wasn't my experience.
Right.
And I don't really know that any of the lesbians that I know experienced their sexuality that way. I mean, there's also like sexuality is a spectrum. So there's definitely like, you know, bi women and mm-hmm. women that are straight, except for like these seven chicks, you know, like all of this exists and yeah. all of this is true. And I do think it's more acceptable for women to experiment with that. But the reason it's more acceptable is because when a guy finds out that his girlfriend used to sleep with chicks, that's supposed to be a turn on. Like, for it doesn't go the other way. A woman doesn't find out that her boyfriend used to casually fuck dudes and get jazzed about it. And you know what? She should. Like, she could.
I was really jazzed to hear you fucked a couple of guys.
Deanna's worried that I have. And I'm always just like, no, I just find dudes to be incredibly attractive when they're good looking and cool. And she's like, would you never? I was like, I kissed a couple guys, but it's like, she's like, you don't like it anymore? I'm like, no. Because it felt weird. That's why you know. It's a physical reaction. Like you said, your skin would crawl.
Yeah. I think that more men would try that sort of a thing if they didn't imagine that an eventual scenario of their girlfriend breaking up with them when they found out.
Yeah.
Whereas like women, we've just been taught, whether or not that's actually true, I don't know if on the guy side of things, if you find out that your girlfriend used to sleep with women, I don't know how that actually feels, but you are supposed to be into it. Guys are supposed to think it's cool, whether or not you actually do.
You gotta think it's
there's
the
a
coolest.
Lot of, yeah, there's a lot of pressure to think it's rad.
You know, I don't know. I've never been a guy who was like, oh, these chicks are hooking up. Like, I think it's, you know, I sort of envision it the same way I do sports, where I go, well, if I can't put myself in the first person position, I can't really connect with it. So like watching women make out does
well, then you're like a hero man. You're like a hero man. All I'm saying is that lesbian is a genre of porn on straight porn websites.
Yes, right. Yes.
And
right.
Gay male is not a genre of porn on straight porn websites.
Do you think
to get gay male videos, you have to click through?
I wonder if part of that, though, is that dudes are so, that maybe there's some dudes who are so threatened by facing their own sexuality, they're like, well, I can't even look at another dude's dick.
Yes, and I do have like a theory about that. I mean, this is what I think it is. I think that men are really, really scared of feeling like women. And the scariest thing in the world would be for another dude to emasculate you, even though that's not actually what gay male sex is. It's like, number one, consensual. Like, people are into it. These dudes, this is not like some prison scenario. You know, like the number of jokes about like some prison thing happening to you. Like, I don't, this is not what it's. It's the same, it falls in the same category of like dudes that say, I wouldn't suck a dick for $1 million. And I always want to be like,
I'd suck a dick for $1,000.
Also, like, what? Like, the. You've created.
If that, like, it's a.
I have that in my car.
Yeah.
But there are also dudes.
A nice
dudes,
night out, maybe.
There are also dudes that would do it.
In an envelope labeled dick sucking.
There are also dudes.
No one writes
that,
for free.
There are also dudes that would do it for free.
Yeah.
So I feel like you're not really looking at the dick sucking economy if you are thinking that you're going to get a million.
He already said he had $1,000.
Wait, hang on. Cameron, is this now an episode of Shark Tank where Jonah's pitching his dick sucking business? What's your overhead, Jonah?
I'm out. And for that reason, I'm out.
Yeah. When I think about it.
So sharks, who wants me to suck their dick?
No.
Lori would be great with that on QVC. You know what I mean?
That's a hero product, Jonah. Yeah.
Get ready for a Cuban sandwich. Mark Cuban is on now. Doesn't matter.
Thanks.
You are.
I didn't know that.
I'll just give a little side note there. His last name is also a sandwich.
I like that. If I knew, I would have really. You know me. If I knew that he was a part of that show, I would have fucking went crazy.
You know, when I think about it, like when I think about actually like.
I'm just imagining Jonah literally going, yes, Cuban sandwich!
No, I seriously would have loved it. I now can only appreciate it in the past. Hindsight, huh?
When I think about it, I don't feel like when I think like, oh, what would it be like if I just sucked a guy's dick? Like, I don't think like, oh my God, I couldn't. I just feel like, I don't know, dicks to me are just kind of gross. You know, like I just don't. Like, I look at my own penis and I go, I don't get it. Like, I just don't really understand.
Chris, we are on the same page about this. You and I could not agree on this more. So you don't have to convince me. I just mean, like, I think that guys, when you are a dude, you are taught from a very early age that you are supposed to just not be a woman. Like, that is a huge part of the male identity is the machismo of not being a woman. And so, therefore, like, the idea that another dude would penetrate you, which is what most people think of when they think of a same-sex male relationship, that's, like, they don't think about, like, family or having a dog together.
They really go to butt
it's,
sex.
Like, just absolutely butt sex all the way. And I think guys have a real big problem with the idea that that could happen to them against their will, which is not what gay male sexuality is. And so thank God that today we're living in this moment where like the government is just saying like, guys, don't worry about butt sex, like do that or don't do that, but still like marriage, that shouldn't, like butt sex shouldn't affect like tax code.
I really hope I really hope that.
Oh, you gotta fill out a 1047. That's a butt sex
form.
Oh
my God, there's so much bureaucracy.
Is it worth
butt
it
sex.
Is it worth it, babe?
By the way, straight people,
I'm gonna go to H&R Cock and get that.
Yay.
By the way, straight people have
Thanks
way
high
more
five, Kevin.
Butt sex than,
straight people do.
Yeah, because percentage-wise, there are way more straight people. So even if like one in 10 straight people are doing this, if that would be equivalent to like the number of gay people that are doing it, since like one in 10 people are gay. But then half of those are women. So we're really just working for like a 50.
I don't know. I hope that part of what this ruling does is, if there are people who were either not ready to or like afraid of coming out or facing their sexuality, I hope the more kind of rainbows they see in the world, they go, oh, okay, well maybe it's not so crazy for me to kind of face the, who
well,
I
the
am.
Approval yeah. for same-sex marriage, like in '96, is like no one was really for it, and now you see just because of just people getting older and people living with it more in the culture and it being more of a thing that they grew up with. It'll be fine. And I think in another few years, it'll be even more. It's like, I think it's just one of those things that younger people who are used to it grow up. And then they're the ones being pulled. Right. And then they're the ones that are okay with it.
I also think that, you know, Chris, I hope that with my whole heart as well. Because what is an amazing thing about being a queer person right now is I don't live in West Hollywood. I don't live in the gay neighborhood here in Los Angeles. I get to choose where I live, and I live near Griffith Park because I really like to hike, and I don't have to live somewhere.
It's also cheaper to live in Griffith Park.
Sure, but I don't have to live somewhere so that I will feel safe. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why gay neighborhoods first were created, and gay bars were such a huge thing, because it was a place where you couldn't be bashed. Or you might not be,
right.
And you still might be leaving there. But at least you knew you had like some semblance of safety in numbers. And mm-hmm. so I think it's a huge testament to, you know, that idea that you're talking about. Just seeing it places brings that feeling everywhere. You know, like when my fiancé and I walk down the street in our neighborhood, which is mixed in every way. Like, we don't feel weird holding hands, and we don't feel unsafe. And that would not have been true 10 years ago. I experienced it as less true. 20 years ago, I know it definitely wouldn't have been as true. So I think we're just moving in this direction where, like, you can be the person that you are, and you can be that wherever.
Yeah.
And so I hope that that does happen more and more to people. You know, I travel so much, and I meet people who are out and struggling in every state. You know, there are gay people in every state that are figuring out how to come out to their bosses, or figuring out how to, like, invite their parents to their wedding or not invite their parents to their wedding. And so it's amazing. We live in this crazy time when a lot of this stuff is going to be, it's going to be like settled. Like, we get to live in that.
I think great. The biggest challenge you face is that your partner is also a comedian.
It's so stressful. Yeah, because she's so much funnier than me.
Yeah. Dating another comedian can be really challenging.
Yeah.
I've avoided it. It's like I once like went on a few dates with another comic a while back, and I was just like, I can't do this.
Yeah, I did it for a while. It was no fun.
Yeah.
Oh, guys, I never thought this would be. I mean, because when we met Rhea and I met, we were both dating other people. We were living with those people, and then I just saw her do stand up. I brought my fiance Rhea on stage the first time she ever did stand up. I introduced her, and she was like amazing that first set.
She's so funny.
And I like loved her stuff so much that I asked her to come open for me out on the road. And so we would travel together. There's a great joke there. Yeah, don't make that joke. But anyway, so then we would travel together, and we weren't dating for a long time. And I just got to appreciate her as a comic first. And I'm only saying that because I think that's actually the only way to do it.
Right.
I don't think you could ever date someone and then like one of you is a comic and then the other one like decides to start,
right.
You like haven't seen each other's acts and then you like meet at a, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm so glad that it happened this way. Because we
yeah,
both
Dory and
that
I have an
like
agreement. I'm never going to run BuzzFeed and she's never going to do stand-up.
Yeah. I think it's the only way you can do it. But I mean, also we're making the decision right now to tour together, which is something that like a decision we made together, because when we first moved here to LA, I was opening for Anthony Jeselnik, and I was gone for like 8 months, just gone. And I would come home on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Rhea would wash my clothes for me and then like repack my bag for me. And then I would leave because I was exhausted. We had like no time together. And so now we're deciding to tour together. And it is so crazy because like we're both women and we're both gay women, and she is really funny. And I have to follow her all the time. She's really, really funny.
Yeah, but you guys have such different, crazy different styles.
Yeah.
We do, and that's absolutely true. But think about 10 years ago. Actually, not even that. Think about now. Think about how many women have women open for them. It's not that many. Like, it's really not.
That's very true. Most
female comics choose male openers because we're already such a minority. It's like there's this fear that we'll burn all of the stuff, or that like the dudes in the audience won't love it because there won't be anything there for them. So like it's really,
my opener is a woman and she's great. And I think it's important because I just think it's nice to have different perspectives.
Yes.
In comedy, you know.
So like, it's not like across the board.
It's not
like,
just here's another white dude. Yeah. You know, like it. I don't know. I just feel like
I was a great opener for Anthony.
For the audience, I think it's good to see different types of comedy without just seeing, you know, I mean, just look, there's an alarming majority of white dudes in this country. There's just an alarming majority of
white dudes. Not for long, man.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, if you look at
but
all the...
Not necessarily in this country, but at shows. Or that we're supposed to craft our jokes for. Audience is not just that they are that, but they're also supposed to be that. That's who we're supposed to be writing for. You know, which is like, I get all the time is people tweeting at me like, we get it, you're a lesbian. And I always I'm always like, well, number one, you do not get it. Because if you got it, you would not send me this tweet. But also, like, you don't realize how many people are tweeting this at me. You're not even creative.
You know, the other thing that sucks about that is that it's, you know, it's almost like people not allow... It's like they're trying to put their limitations on you. It's like, yeah, everyone is everything. So you could say that to... I get it. You're a football player. Do I have to see you?
I want to start tweeting that at football players. That's really funny.
Chris, that is exactly...
Got a game coming up.
You know, it's like, oh, you're on every Sunday. You're in a football game.
I get it, LeBron
James.
You're
in a Gatorade commercial.
You play basketball.
You're a football player.
I love that. That's exactly what... I mean, I don't even know how to respond to it because I don't want to fight with dummies.
I think
dummies
fuck you is the
on the internet.
Response.
But, like, it's like not even worth my time.
No
but
response.
I do think, like, I talk about being a lesbian as much as you guys talk about being straight men.
Yeah,
that's how, is how much I talk about.
Well, that's you know, of the arguments that I've gotten with people where I talk about how I don't like sports, and people go, "We get it, you don't like sports." And I always go, "That is nothing compared to how much I have to hear about fucking sports." So you go fuck yourself in the face.
The
like
same.
I don't. Do you consider your and maybe this is another thing you even think of? Do you consider yourself as a gay comic or a comic who happens to be gay?
I'm fine with either thing, but one thing that is true is that I've always been in the mainstream comedy world, and that is where I want to stay, and also why I talk about being a lesbian. So it's like a firefox eating its own tail, because there used to be like queer comics that played, you know, cruise ships or like
we all know
West
Ant.
Hollywood or they never like I started in alt comedy rooms and I've always been doing alt comedy rooms. I also started doing stand up after I was already out. So I never came out of the closet and I never played specifically gay rooms. So I'm just happy to be like the comic I am who happens to be gay but also a gay comic. It's just that it really is important to me that people just realize like the reason I talk about this is because this is what comics talk about. We talk about our lives.
Talk about your life.
And your
and
point
what,
of view.
What you're experienced with. And if you're going to be the type of comic that goes out of their way specifically to try to talk about what you think the audience wants to hear, then you're a cruise ship comic.
Also,
there's nothing wrong with that, but it's just not, that's like, I feel like my favorite comedians of all time were who they are on stage and not trying to be like, hey, you ever notice how, you know, when you go to the grocery store and then there's that guy? Like,
I've noticed that. Hang on. Keep going.
Oh, wait a minute.
I've been to the grocery store.
Like, it's like no one like went to Richard Pryor. It's like, we get it. You're black. Motherfucker. We get it. You know, it's like, you're like, Lucy K. We get it. You have kids. Like, no one fucking points that out.
It's veiled homophobia. Absolutely. And, you know, the reason I bring up that I've always been in the mainstream is because I feel a responsibility to talk about who I am. It's not just what makes sense because we all talk about our lives, but it's also like, since I started doing stand-up, you know, the movement towards marriage equality, I lived in Boston when Massachusetts became the first state to allow equal marriage. That happened, you know, 15 years ago or whatever it is. And now this whole time in comedy clubs, in alt rooms, like how many times do you hear straight dude comics talk about their opinion about equal marriage? It's on almost every show. On almost every show for the entire time that I've done stand-up, there is a guy being like, if you have a problem with gay marriage, then I have a problem with you. And that's fine. I'm happy to have people talking about it. But it feels very weird to me to be left out of my own conversation. Like, especially if I'm on the show and somebody's going to make a point that's like maybe a little off. Like they... Like, this used to be a joke people would make all the time. People still do sometimes make it. Like, if you think that, like, gay male sexuality is pretty gross, you're probably gay. Like people that say that always bothers me because it's like you're taking the worst people in the world and you're saying that they are me. Like, you're not actually making gay people feel better. You're saying, like, you're an asshole. You must be a gay asshole. Like, you're just calling somebody gay. And so I feel like it's really important for me to talk about this in the room because everybody else is talking about it. Like, this has been a hot button topic. Everybody talks about it. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So if I don't talk about it, the conversation is happening without
me. It's almost like the straight people are like, here's the thing you got to understand about the gays. And you're like, excuse me, I'm gay. This is a private conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
So the gays will do this and this and this.
Exactly. The gays actually comes up as a phrase. And a lot of times I'll hear comics talk about it. And then they're also talking to the audience as if there's no gay people in the audience. Like, they'll be like, you know how, like, when we're hanging out with gays and we're like, we're fine with you. And I'm like, wait, who are you talking about? Like, I host this show.
I have a black friend.
One of my least favorite things, and friends of mine I've heard say this, and it's kind of like, and it's a very accepting way, but like, I hear usually women say, oh, my gay, or my best gay in high school. And like, I say, you could just say friend.
Yeah,
it doesn't make a difference. Like, you could still have gone and went clothes shopping and had a day at a spa. You don't have to point it out. That's like, well, me and my gay went out the other day. It's like, that's really shitty. I find, and it's like, they're not homophobic, but there's this weird terminology that I think should be just kind of gotten rid of.
I think the same thing is happening with race right now. And I just think it's something that people that are in a power position just need to be aware of. Like, if you're trying to be an advocate, that doesn't mean that you speak for the population that you're trying to advocate for. Because I see the same thing with, like, you know, right now, so many white people are saying, like, you know, we're with you, Baltimore, but then feel uncomfortable if, like, a black comic has a joke about it. Like, no, it's the best way to be an advocate is to point to the person who's speaking on their own behalf. I really believe that.
And not try to take the attention yourself.
Yes. Point. And not be like, let me explain it to other me's. You know?
I know that there was a...
Let me handle it, me. Yeah.
There was a guy once who really went after me on Twitter because I use the word lovely a lot to describe people. And in my mind, it's an adjective that describes a personality. So I use it for both men and women. Across the board, I just go, oh, that guy's really – he's really lovely. He's a really lovely guy. Or I go, oh, she's a really lovely person. She's a really lovely woman. And this guy's like, you fucking piece of shit. Do you how dare you use that to describe women? You're a fucking misogynist. And my first thought was like, well, A, you clearly don't understand my vocabulary because I'm not – I don't think of it as a physical description. And B, and I think I actually was with April Richardson at the time, who was sort of offended because it was like, well – that guy, I'm a woman. That guy can't fucking speak for me. And it's and even though his intention may be, hey, you know, women, you know, like, we should all be equal, whatever his intention was, that she felt she was actually offended by his stance that he was trying to white knight a situation. It's like, he's a, like, why does he think I need him to ride in and fucking save the day by being aggressive?
Right. Because he made the Avengers.
Yeah. No, I mean, of course, that is the problem with the sentiment, not all men. Like, that's the reason that so many women were upset with, like, the not all men hashtag, as, like, any second that women have a second, you know, women have a moment to talk about what it's like to feel scared in the world and unsafe, because statistically we are way more victimized, and also, and I really do mean victimized, because I don't mean, like, yes, we are also raped more often, but we are also, like, made to watch entertainment where women are raped, and then it's supposed to be okay with us, and we can't even talk about that it's not okay with us. Like, I'm not talking about the specific victimization of rape survivors, because that, I think, is a better word for that. I'm just talking about, like, being a woman in the world, and then we try to have this moment of talking about it with each other, and then being like, oh, any dudes want to eavesdrop on this? No problem if you do. We're trying to talk to you about it. And then, of course, it's, like, bundled into this thing, like, wait, but wait a minute. And I feel like the but wait a minute is just something I would love for us to get past in this news today.
Right,
like,
right,
today's
right.
The day, maybe, and it's not going to happen, but I would love it if we could just get past but wait a minute. That would be so nice.
There's a thing I was talking with someone about recently, about the movie Wild, the Reese Witherspoon movie, mm-hmm. where she hikes across the Pacific Rim Trail or whatever. But there's it's pretty interesting, because I was talking about, like, you know, as a guy, I could say that I understand that women have it tough, or I could say that I it's like, yeah, it must be scary. I can imagine it's scary, but those are those, like, it must be. I'd imagine it is.
And I was watching this movie, and like, you know, when you're watching a movie and you're watching the protagonist and you put yourself in the protagonist's shoes and you are, you know, seeing the world through their eyes. And there's a lot of a couple parts in that movie where it's like there's like a guy there and it's a scary situation because you don't know. And you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if he's cool, what he's going to do. If he does anything, is he nice? And like I was explaining to somebody, I was like, that's like, you know, it's like I like that about that movie because it kind of shows that, like, you know, very uneasy feeling that women can have. Because no matter what a guy says or what he, and I believe that it's tough, but they'll never know and they'll never understand how bad
it is. You
know,
and I have to be honest, I even feel like, I even kind of feel dumb talking about it because I just feel like an ape who's like, oh, you, the women got it. They don't know. You know, because there's no way that I could possibly understand. So do I have any opinion that's remotely valid about this?
I mean, I think these opinions that you guys are expressing right now are actually the opinions, which is saying, like, I don't really understand feeling this way all the time. I think that's all you need to say. Seriously, if you just say that again and again, that is what makes women feel safe, is just saying, like, I don't understand what you're going through. That is awesome to hear that. I feel great. So you made me feel great. I think that's what women want to hear. I'm going to forget to say this if I don't say this right now. I have to tell you my story about this morning.
Please.
Because it relates to both of you guys. And Matt, like, you're also included in this a really important way.
Well, he's here.
Yeah. Close to my heart.
I'm here.
But this morning at 7 a.m. So there's a little bit of backstory to this. When I came out to my parents, both from this conservative Catholic background, my dad specifically had a terrible time with it. I was also having a terrible time with it. I was a theology major at the time. I went to daily mass. I thought something was wrong with me. I didn't know any functional, out, successful, happy gay people. I thought I was ruining my life. My dad and I had a similar experience, except that I was living in my own body, so I knew that this was real. And I think for him it was really, really difficult. For 5 years, you know, he cried every time that we talked. He asked me, you know, questions about, like, you know, don't you ever want to be able to be happy? Don't you ever want to be able to have, like, a partner? Don't you ever want to be able to have kids? And it was, like, my worst fears being realized back at me. And then when I came out when I was 20. When I was 25, I moved back to my hometown, Chicago. And not long after I moved back, my dad apologized to me for all of that. And, like, made a 180 where now my parents stand up and salute when PFLAG walks by at our small town 4th of July parade. And he's become a great advocate. He's also like a small Italian crying dad. He's very, very sweet. And so now he like tells everybody, you know, just like, yeah, I love my daughter Cameron and she's a lesbian, you know, like that kind of dad. And, this morning he called me at 7 o'clock this morning. He called me at 7. It was like 7:00. I was asleep and I hear my phone ring and I picked it up and, it was my dad and he was like, you won. Mm-hmm. And I haven't talked to my dad since I was at midnight 2 nights ago. And I won at midnight. And I always tell my parents when I'm going to be on television, because like I made a mistake early on and they heard about it from someone else and they were like so destroyed.
Yeah.
So I always tell them. So I knew that he had TiVo'd it. Like, it was very much like, I'm seeing you on my TV right now, and I've got it programmed in my TiVo. I'm going to really watch it. So I get this phone call at 7 o'clock in the morning. He's like, you won! And I was like, Dad, I'm asleep. I will call you back. And I hung up on him. Because I thought he was calling to congratulate me about at midnight. So I go back to sleep. I'm like laying there rolling my head around just like, God damn it, Dad. You're waking me up at 7 o'clock in the morning. Like, what the hell? Then, like, I finally couldn't go back to sleep, so I pop on my phone, and then that's when I went on Instagram, and I saw Jonah had posted a picture of Rhea and
it was a great picture.
That said, like, my really great buds, Cam and Rhea, are going to be able to get married, and I was like, oh my God, my dad called to wish me congratulations about marriage equality, and I told him it was too early and hung up on him.
Too late. I don't support it anymore. You hung up on me. That was it. That was the window.
Did you call him back and go, what are you talking about? I was talking about at midnight.
So my dad is a lawyer, and right after that, he went into court. he had called my mom after I got off the phone and was like, Cameron thinks I was talking about At Midnight. If she calls you, tell her I meant marriage equality. So like, it's like a network of my family telling me. So I finally did talk to him. I'm like, Dad, I'm so sorry. I appreciate, you know.
I mean, it
so
is, it's, you know, part of me is, you know, when I saw the news this morning, part of me was a little indignant where I just sort of felt like, well, yeah, you know, like,
you know what's interesting?
Yeah, that shit, that's what it, like, I was almost kind of annoyed by how obvious it is that it should, that the fact that we even had to have this, you know, like, so you really, honestly, there's a debate about whether or not it should be okay for people to have rights. Like, it doesn't...
But it's failed homophobia, like Cameron's talking about. They're not talking about, like they switch their conversation. They're not saying it's about gay marriage. They're just saying you can't change the Constitution like that. That's illegal.
When I got up this morning and I went to Huffington Post and I saw the headline, I thought I was using Firefox and I had proxied and I was on HuffPo UK. I had, I was like, this is America? I was like, holy shit.
My dad called you. You hung up on him immediately. Yeah. Stop calling the UK, Mistress Zeno.
She's calling everyone.
Do you see Ian McKellen's Vine?
No.
He was just like with his partner and like what was it, like confetti or something
like
that?
Yeah, just tossing
something. And going like, congratulations, America, for catching up with the rest of us or something like that.
Well, Chris, I think all anybody needs to do is read Clarence Thomas's Dissent and... You can understand what a massive moment this is for any person in a same-sex couple. Because his dissent, did any of you guys read it?
No.
It's
totally nuts because there's a moment in there where he says, the government can't bestow dignity on a person. And therefore, the government can't take dignity away. Slavery did not take dignity from black people, and internment camps didn't take dignity from the Japanese. And the American government can't dignify a person. It's inherent, and therefore, like, this ruling has nothing to do with dignity. And the reason he used that word is because the ruling, that's the buzzword that they made the basis of the ruling, like the dignity of a person. And so he's saying that the government can't grant or take away dignity. And I mean, first of all, like it's totally your choice if you want to compare marriage inequality to slavery. But I think it's like you're maybe pushing a large stone up a hill as like, hey, slaves had it fine and so did gays. You know, like that's a little bit of a rough point to take.
And I feel like ultimately... Fine. If you want to make a broad philosophical argument like, well, only a person can decide if they feel dignity or not.
Yeah.
But if you're standing on their fucking face with a golf cleat.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're beating them with, you know, with a hockey stick and then like, stay the fuck down. I don't feel dignified. Well, that's your choice. Like, it's sort of a strange.
I agree. I think that he got it all wrong. Like, he just clearly doesn't. I don't know why he doesn't see that in himself. But I will tell you that a government can dignify a person. Absolutely. When I heard our president today talk about, first of all, just the fact that Obama has included same-sex couples in like all of his State of the Union address, like every time I hear it, I can't believe it. And I'm 33. You know, there are people who are 88 and they've been fighting much longer than I have. And to hear our president say like, today we are a step closer to a more perfect union. Like, I don't care who you are and if you think the government is bull. Like, I don't care. It's not – to have someone that has that much power see you, it really matters. Like, it really, really matters. That's why it does matter if you change your Twitter avatar. Like, those silly little things – I got a bunch of texts from friends today, like – texting your gay friends on it's like you feel seen.
And you know what's obnoxious about the dissent is that it's very easy when you're sitting in one of the biggest, most powerful chairs to be like, these people, these masses, to say what the experience is like for them. I mean, it's the same thing as like being a guy and going like, oh, well, women probably should blah blah blah. It's like you're in a very unique position. You're in a position of power. You're not you can't say what people feel or not. I mean, like, the ironic thing is that a statement like that almost takes away the dignity of what it means to be an American citizen.
Yes.
Because it's very close, and this is just my interpretation, but it's very close to a bully, like, shoving someone down and going, like, what? Oh, I guess that's your problem. You know, like, it's...
You chose to feel that way.
You chose to feel that way.
Yeah, you chose to be
amputated.
What
are you crying for?
Yeah.
I didn't do it. I just, whatever. Like, that doesn't... That... You know, I'm sure he didn't intend to sound bullying, but that sounds like bully logic.
Maybe I mean, actions have consequences. We don't live in a world where you can take an action and then you can just say to somebody that, well, you chose to be affected by that.
Right.
That's what I think you're saying, and I agree with you completely. Yeah, there's no, like, this isn't a, I tossed a ball, but it hit you because you did not get out of the way. Like,
yeah.
That's not how the world works. That's not how physics works. So it's certainly not how, like, the world works.
No, that is how physics works. You should get out of the way of that ball.
I still don't understand the argument, because it's like, you know, they're saying it's against the Constitution, or they were saying that, but it's like, it's, if you take out, like, because the Bible says, you know, man and a woman, that's marriage. But the bylaw has nothing to do with the country, because of separation of church and state. So then where's the argument?
Well, I think that some
Republican-appointed justices.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's that. And I also think that there's, so that religious language was veiled, you know, in talking about tradition. Like, religion was, the word tradition was substituted for religion when people could say something like, our tradition has always been that men and women loved each other and got married, and then they could get around that being religious. But the thing is like, our tradition has not been static. Like, women used to be property.
Yeah.
We used to be traded for cows. Like, so there's no stasis to this tradition. Also, like, divorce exists, and we're moving. We are a moving, evolving organism.
Imagine if they did
organism.
Take traditions on, like, yeah. We rule that this country shall open one present Christmas Eve. That is the tradition.
It's President Dad.
I would like to rule that...
hey, Russia, what do you keep doing over there? Keep it down!
A mandatory 3 p.m. sit.
I just feel like we're living...
All sweaters.
Tradition dictates we sit around as a family and eat together on Saturdays.
The flag is now made out of DACAs.
America, if I hear one more peep out of you...
I will turn this country around.
Around to the 50s.
But we are living in this moment where it is possible that even before this podcast is released, like, some of these things that we have couched in tradition that are actually just bullshit nonsense are going to evolve and go away. And not that things will be healed, but I mean, so Obama went from giving this speech in the Rose Garden that Rhea and I were, like, staring into each other's eyes and, like, sobbing, and our very small chihuahua was trying to figure out, like, who to comfort more. He had, like, a stressful day today.
Who did he choose?
Yeah. Rhea. She has more tears.
I was hoping
he likes to lick tears.
I was hoping you were going to say his balls.
Yeah. Then Obama went from there to Charleston to give the eulogy for those nine people that were killed at that church, those nine black people that were killed by a racist white man at that church. And he sang, did you see him sing Amazing Grace?
Mm-hmm.
Our president sang Amazing Grace today as a part of this eulogy, sitting in front of, like, the leaders of the black church. You know, so it's like all black faces, and our president is one of them, and they're singing on NBC a spiritual song, you know, that has roots in, like, the black community specifically. And we watched that from our president today too. Like, we watched our president stand with actual Americans that have been ignored for a very long time. This is all in one day.
I mean, it sounds like President Obama is having the best week ever.
I liken it to having, like, a shitty dad. And I didn't. I was lucky. I had good parents. But for someone who has a shitty dad who always kind of ignores them and be like, yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's fine. I mean, you're not like your brother, but you're fine, you know? And then to have the dad go, oh, well, I guess you're just a pussy because I can't take away your dignity. It's like, yeah, but we inherently need to be accepted as human beings. It's part of our biological makeup that we are accepted and connect.
Yeah.
You know? So how, I mean, I don't know. I guess, on a large level, the government cannot take a wand and imbue you like through magic powers. But I mean, that's not how people work. That's not a, you know what it is? It's not a human statement.
Yeah. And also, if that was true, we would have like no legal system. Cause like most of our laws are actually based on protecting people's dignity. It turns out. Like, I mean,
yeah.
You know, like that's the same reason you can't like kill somebody with your car for right. no yeah, reason. Cause like
they had some rights.
Dignity and yeah, rights and stuff. Yeah, so it's like, that
sort of thing.
Like a lot of our laws are based. In that
you hear
same,
that, sugar.
In that same yeah. idea that we're like people.
So what does the rest of your day look like? Are you and Rhea gonna go out tonight or stay in and
you know,
be
when
together?
I get home, we're gonna go on a hike to the place that we got engaged. And we're gonna
And then she's gonna make you watch Star Trek again?
She's gonna make me watch Star Trek. I'm really good at watching Star Trek. I don't understand. Yeah, we had a great moment in a hotel room that Matt was watching us.
I was watching on Twitter.
Where I was understanding what the Borg were for the first time. It was really confusing. I was like, how do they get into the cube or out of the cube? She's like, they're just there. Like, anyway, it was great.
Rhea.
No, but like, there's like a ship or something. Like, they beamed. Like, how are they getting out of there? I can't explain. Anyway.
So Rhea and I like literally all the same things. It's
yeah,
crazy.
You guys are the
like,
same person.
Like, we're always like Instagramming like Shark Tank or like vintage
cool
guitars,
old guitars.
Or, like,
yeah.
It's
yeah,
Star
you
Trek.
Guys are the.
Oh, she's great. You found a good one.
I know.
Yeah, she's the best.
Yes. So we're gonna walk up to when. So we had lived in Los Angeles for just a couple months. We had a crazy. So we got engaged. No, where should I start? I'll start here. We started dating when I was already moving to LA. We met in Chicago, and that's. You know, we were both living at the time and she had a job there and she had just started doing stand up and there was like a lot of reasons for her to stay. And I'd already kind of exhausted all my opportunities in Chicago and I knew I was going to move to LA. And then we started dating and I moved here by myself. I moved to LA and I was here for 6 days and I was walking a dog. I was staying at somebody's place and therefore I was like walking their dog for them. And I was walking this dog and I tore all of the cartilage in my knee.
Oh, jeez.
Like just standing and I had to fly home and have surgery and Rhea came and lived at my parents' house for 2 weeks. I mean, we were 2 months into dating and she was living at my parents' house in the suburbs and she and my dad would walk to the train together and then take the train downtown because they both like worked in the city. And yeah, so we essentially moved into my parents' house 2 months into dating. And then as my knee got better, my Nana, who I was very, very close with, died 2 days short of her 100th birthday. Wow. And Rhea, it happened like the same week. I was recovering from surgery, hanging out with my Nana. She passed away. Rhea was there in the hospital, like as she went through this pretty painful, like 48-hour process of like allowing herself to die. And Rhea saw the whole thing. And then we just like looked at each other and said, hey, so we should just move to Los Angeles together, right? Like, because like life
at this point,
because like life is shit. Like, you can need emergency surgery, and people can die, and you have to watch it sometimes, and like all of these things are possible. So we should just take a risk.
That's absolutely true. But she was 100. She had a good run.
I mean, I just think it was actually the first time I've ever seen anybody go though. Like, I don't know if you've like looked in someone's eyes as they were doing that, and a lot of people have. I hadn't before, and it was. And Rhea was there too, and it was like this transformative experience for both of us. And so we moved out here, and a couple months later, Doma was overturned, and she asked me to marry her on the top of this beautiful mountain, and it was wonderful. And then the next week, I got the job opening for Anthony, and I was gone for 8 months. So she had moved out here, knew nobody, and asked me to marry her, and I was like, absolutely. And then I was just gone.
Yeah, but that's when you got Murph the Derf.
That's when we got our dog, yeah. So I feel very lucky to have gone through all of this with somebody. It's like a pressure cooker of experiences. We've only been together for 3 years, but God, I feel like I've like taken it all on.
3 years is a good amount. I mean, it's a good point to get married too. I think like 3 years, it's obviously working, you know, it doesn't seem like you're rushing it. It doesn't seem like you've waited too long. Like it seems like
that was us.
That's about the right amount of time.
Yeah.
you know, to
year and a half.
It's just weird to actually find anybody as a comic,
right?
Especially. I mean, I don't know. This feels very adult. Mm-hmm. I am firmly in my 30s. There's no reason this should feel too adult, but also this is the job that we happen to do. And I think for me, this all felt very like, what? I'm going to find someone? I'm going to marry them?
Yeah.
We're going to hang out together? We'll have a dog?
Do you feel like something has been lifted? Does it feel different than it did when you went to bed last night?
I cannot believe this. What is, we both looked at each other, we like cried, hugged, and then Rhea and I were like, what are we going to talk about on stage?
I don't know why that took me a minute for
like,
the wheels to turn.
So whole...
things are pretty great.
Yeah.
God, fuck.
I was a lot funnier when I was being
My whole like next hour, because I had this album that came out and it was like at this really raw time when like I had just found someone I was going to marry and like most... The majority of states did not allow equal marriage. And then so that was released in October of last year. And since then, we were going to go on this tour where we were going to stop in every state that didn't allow equal marriage and do a show. And as we were planning the tour, we kept being like, God damn it. Because like states would get knocked out. And then we would feel so terrible. Like,
yeah,
fuck
but
you,
still,
Kentucky.
You still
stay
have the rust
unequal.
Belt.
Yeah.
You still have the rust belt.
Can I tell you what, though? I think what's kind of magical about it is that now... You can just talk about being a person and being married.
It's that improv thing of like walking through the door and trusting that there's like other stuff on the other side. Like people in improv, there's that rule. Like if you have a gun, if you mime a gun on stage or something, you have to shoot it. You can't just like hold the gun and not use it. You have to pull the trigger and then find out what happens next. So I do think that in terms of comedy, because so much of my comedy could also be considered activism, like, I'm fascinated to see what will happen next.
I mean, it's just, I think, you know, that could just come out of the equation a bit.
Yeah.
And it's just, you're married.
I'm like a fun person again?
You're married. And, you're
what
married.
If I, you're happily married.
What if I get to be like a fun, normal person? That would be crazy. Because I've just been, I mean, I am angry. Like, I've been angry. That's in my comedy. I think stand-up is fueled by anger. Like, we're all angry. Something happened to all of us that we're pissed about.
I think we're fueled by dissonance. And I think anger is a form of that.
Sure.
I think fear is also a form of... I mean, it's all... You know, a lot of it, I think, boils down to fear. You know, like, we get angry because we're afraid and we don't like being afraid and we want to change something and we, you know, or it's like we... You know, I think it's fueled by some type of dissonance. There's something that's not, and I think anger is definitely a form of that. I think it would be challenging for you is, you know, don't go looking to create incendiary situations so that you can get mad.
I'm putting myself in terrible positions. I mean, the good news is I'm a woman, so...
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
You got that going for you.
I was going to say that.
So I'm still, like, not going to...
That's going nowhere.
I know. You know, I never thought of it. Like that. Well, there's a two-step verification process right there. You know, it's like, I guess if you're a gay man, okay, great, that's a... But you're still a guy, so you still kind of have it easy in some ways. But it's like, okay, good. Now we dealt with this. Now there's this other hole. Like, maybe that could be the focus.
Well, I mean, we talk – and I'm bringing Rhea up so much in this podcast. She's a huge part of today.
You marry her.
Yeah, I'm going to marry her. But that is something we talk about when we're touring as well because, like, people will meet us after shows, and now we have to ask for a male security guard because it used to be that – like Rhea would inadvertently step into this like weird protector role. Cause I get people that are really excited to meet me in the positive way with like tears or hugging or butt touching or picking up.
Sure.
That kind of thing happens. But also like sometimes people are very angry about the stuff that I'm saying with a very large smile on my face. Like I don't think I'm that.
Oh wow.
They do really?
Yeah.
Come to you in person?
Yes. I have had, yes. Yeah. Guys. It's never, I mean, obviously.
Saying what?
I just had it happen to me very recently in Denver, and a guy came up after the show. He was like a very muscly, you know, kind of every jock kind of a guy. Absolutely the kind of guy I would have dated back in the day. And he was very drunk. He was with his friends, And he was like, I love that show, man. I laughed my head off. And then I could see him like drunk realizing something also. He was like, I laughed my head off. But also like, I'm a dude and I just felt like really upset that you're taking men down by saying that like you're not into her. Like he went from just like that was very funny to like having a very personal reaction to something I wasn't saying. Like, I'm not sure what was happening in his head, the feeling of rejection that it set off for him.
Whatever was in his head was long before your show.
Yes, it was. And his friends, he was with these bunch of dude friends, and they were trying to quiet him down, but they weren't really, like, what they needed to do was stop him, like, physically stop him, because he was starting to come at me. And then there was a woman from the club that was with us, and she, also, like, women aren't taught to fight dudes, like that's not something we're taught. So she was just standing there, and I swear to God, like a team of lesbians came and made like a human wall to protect us from getting hurt. But like, Rhea has many times had to step up and be that person and put herself in harm between me and somebody else. And the wild thing about that is, like, in our relationship, she's like this like big strong guy, but she is 4 inches taller than me. She's like 5'8" and she weighs like 8 pounds. Like, she's so thin. So like, we're just small. We're two small women and we're in the world and we're showing up in these places where we get to surprise people and we get to, you know, play a mainstream room in Fort Wayne, Indiana and have people like give us a standing ovation because they can't believe how relatable it was. But then also we're genuinely challenging and it's scary sometimes because we actually can't fight back. I'm a fighter, but I can't fight back, you know, dudes that are Jonah's size. Like, it turns out that's not
I can't fight guys
can
my
do.
Size either.
Jonah can't fight guys my size.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean,
Jonah has a rule, Troyer or lower.
So what's the, I mean, that is just a strange, I mean, that's, yeah, it's just not something that I ever have to deal with.
I'm trying so hard to not take it in. I am somebody who just today got equal rights, and I am somebody who, like, you know, when I came out at my, I went to a college where it was, sexual orientation was not covered in the non-discrimination policy, so I could have been kicked out of school for being gay. That's the environment that I came out in. I lied to people about who I was. My closest friend at the time, when I came out to her, she didn't talk to me for 3 weeks because she was worried I was going to go to hell. Like, my parents cried. I cried. Like, I tried to cope using alcohol and food and like bad sex with men that I didn't want to be having and like, you know, getting blackout drunk. Like, I went through this like crucible of like really being hated. And by myself, more than maybe anybody else, because I felt like I was bringing all this on myself. And so now I feel like that's why it sucks so much, because you just want to be like, fuck you, I made it through that. Like,
yeah, you have
I made
no,
it.
You have
like,
no idea
I made
what
it,
I went
and
through.
It's hard every day. Like, every day, I make the decision to hold my wife's hand, my future wife's hand, in a situation where we might get looked at in a shitty way, or somebody might say something fucked up to us, and it's every fucking day. I knew I was going to cry. I told you I was going to cry.
Right. Yeah, we got you in the last.
I also never cry, ever, so you did it. Like, I make that decision every day, and it's scary every day. Like, it is. And this won't be true in 10 years. In 10 years, this is going to be, like, a beautiful fossil that we, like, drill through the amber. And, like,
we don't
want
to clone this.
Yeah, yeah. No, we're going to make, like, a beautiful park that people can visit, and there'll be, like, a terrible tragedy.
Full of bigoted dinosaurs.
Yeah, exactly. like, this isn't going to be forever, but right now, this was this experience. Like, this experience was terrible. And now I feel like it's still challenging. It's not... I don't know when it's going to not be challenging. I'm really looking forward to that.
You know, unfortunately, there's just some hateful people in the world. And if you can be satisfied with anything, maybe this is even the wrong approach, but I just know that, you know, I feel like you've already won. Because you're not going to stop doing comedy. You still have your audience. Those people are still, you're still going to, you know, people are still going to hug you. You're still changing. You know, if you even just change one person's life, you would feel vindicated, and you've changed scores of people's lives. You know, like, this is, it should strengthen you. And you also have to know that, you know, a person like that, doesn't matter how much they snark back, it doesn't matter how much they attack you or tell people to troll you or try to take away from you, nothing that person says can change the fact that you know they're unhappy. And they can try to lie about it, and they be like, I don't know what you're talking about. But you know that they are fucking miserable, sad, lonely, disgusting people that hate themselves, and they have to live with that.
So my question is, how do you scale that up then? Because here's why it affects me. Because it's not just that guy. Like, because I have my like block button finger is great. Because like the number of times that I hear from these people. And I know that today this wonderful ruling happened. And then I also read that dissent. Because I want to know what are the other viewpoints on this. And like I said, I mean, I come from a religious background where this was something that was really hard to accept for me. Like, I get it. I understand that there are challenging things. But it's when it's not one person. Like, that's the thing. I bring up that guy. That's just an example. Like, I could give, I mean, I take screenshots of the stuff that I get that's particularly scary so that I have it for proof, if I'm ever like attacked down the line. And I'm not trying to say this to say like I'm some martyr. I'm saying like, this is actually what this is like. And this is actually why this matters. And this is why when somebody says like, the government can't give you your dignity. No, but like, we need to be protected, like, because we are vulnerable, because we're just individual people. And for some reason, the actions that I take in my home in a consensual way with another adult are still so threatening, even today.
I mean, the fact that
I had to hear on NPR, you know, people reading equally the backlash and the positive responses. Yeah.
The fact that you have to, I mean, you're essentially in a lot of ways going through life with 50-pound weights on your ankles, right? So you, unfortunately, you're in kind of this warrior's path, and you just, fortunately or unfortunately, you know, that's what it is, and it sucks. I mean, it sucks because most people don't have to deal with it, and I'm sure, you know, when civil rights was brewing, there were African Americans who were like, what am I supposed to do? Every time I walk into town, people look at me weird.
And I mean, I think this still happens today.
Of course it still happens today. And so you know, I don't know. I think a lot of that should fuel you almost to defy them. And also I would recommend don't go on social media as much.
I mean, I try.
Honestly,
I'm telling you.
Don't go on social media as much. And
I don't even have a regular Facebook account. Like, this is all stuff that is coming. I mean, really, I'm not looking for this. That's the other thing. Like, I'm not, you know, I like the second it pops up, I delete it or block it or get it away from me, unless it's particularly scary. And then I take a picture of it.
Just don't
for the police.
Don't be consumed by it, because I do think that, you know, I think there is sort of a conservation of emotional energy. Like, if enough people are negative at you, you're just going to express that. You know what I mean? Because you're a fucking human being. There's only so much you can take of people going like, hey, fuck you, fuck. And a certain thing, like, I want to fucking murder all of you. You know, it's like the 1,000th person, you know.
Well, how am I doing this is my general question. Besides this conversation today, which is more raw and emotional than I ever am.
Do you have a therapist?
Well, no, I just mean like actually as my outward projection of what's going on. Because, yes, I mean, I've therapy and all that stuff. I guess what I mean is like in my comedy, do I seem pissed off? Do I seem like I'm reactionary? Because that is actually important to me to know, is whether or not I'm allowing this to affect my art. Like, that would be the only thing that would be a really huge bummer to me.
No, I would not describe you as a pissed off comic.
No, not at all.
Because that, if that ever happens, then that is when I feel like I will have lost.
No, you haven't lost.
Is if I have gotten to the point where the art has changed.
Maybe that's something you need to go through. I mean, like, watch Bill Hicks tapes, you know, like, or tapes. Watch Bill Hicks videos online where he snaps and tells the audience they're fucking cunts because they're stupid and they don't, you know, because someone heckles him in a dumb way, and he's so offended by the fact that someone just heckles him with "you suck," and his it just like snaps him. He's like, "You can't come up with something." You know, like, I mean, you know, he was very angry and passionate in that moment. And that was that. I don't think you need to worry about whether or not you're being too this or too that. You just need to worry about whether or not you're being authentic. And if you're being authentic, you know, it doesn't matter because people will know it's coming from a real place. So if you happen to go through a period where you're angrier on stage than normal, then be angrier on stage. That's who you are. Like, don't let don't let the world decide whether or not you're too much for them. Like, if, you know, if people want to connect with that, they can connect with it. If not, they can fuck off. Like, it's not your responsibility, is to yourself. So you be true to who you are, and maybe the next album will be angry, or maybe it'll be sunny, or maybe it'll be, you know, maybe it'll be more about lesbian issues, maybe it'll be about women issues, maybe it'll be about human issues. It doesn't matter. It's just whatever you're feeling, you should be doing. You know, like, that's who you should be as an artist. Not, don't worry about that other stuff.
I think you should worry about everything.
Well, fortunately, the internet's here to make sure that you can always worry about everything.
The next time, I'm just going to be all like, my wife.
And that's the cover of her mother-in-law. Like,
you know, women.
Cam got real soft. No. I just think as a comic, it's always a line that you're writing. I think whoever you are, I think, and this is not to say that I edit myself. I mean, God, I scream on stage all the time. But it's more to say just like, I guess it's like, are you actually being authentically you, and is paying attention to what, you know, the people that are negative, like, is that really your experience, you know, or your experience might just be trying to block those people out. And so I think I'm still at that zone.
My whole thing is that will anything they say stop you from doing the stuff you've already been doing? If the answer is no, then they don't matter. Then all of a sudden the power goes away from anything anyone says, because it's not going to make a difference. It's like, I'm walking in this direction. If someone says, like, you know, fuck you, you're not walking the right, you know, like, your walk is weird. I go, still walking this way. It's not going to stop anything. So if you just kind of continue on with what you're doing, their power goes away.
It's like when Batman shakes off Scarecrow's fear toxin. You can't scare Batman.
Ask Rhea.
No, I'm totally the superheroes one. I swear.
Oh, you do. Okay.
I'm the superheroes one. That's the difference.
That She's and musicals. Beam. I got those unlocked.
Well, your current album is called Same Sex Symbol.
On K Records. Kill Rockstars Records.
And people should buy it and review it favorably. and also you're on the stand-up cluster, which we're posting soon too.
I'm really excited about that. Yeah, to be on the stand-up
and
cluster.
The season premiere of The Meltdown.
I will also be on The Meltdown. This is a
don't forget to call your dad.
Tell him Tuesday.
Shut up, Matt. She was about to compliment the podcast.
Oh, what?
No, it's
I want a picture of that face. I don't have my phone. Can someone?
I'm trying to hold it.
Yeah, please do.
Oh my God, it's beautiful.
Yeah, I love it. Just got to caption it. Someone telling me something nice about the podcast. You have to do that.
Yeah, yeah. We're not affected by external praise or negativity. Yeah.
Yeah. But it looks so genuine. It's like
anytime. Oh, it is. It
yeah,
is.
Yeah, yeah.
It's real.
Oh, this is great. I mean, I can't believe I get to do this for a job. Isn't that awesome?
I mean, and that's the other side of it too, is that, yeah, there's forces out there that are trying to bring you down because you threaten whatever sort of, you know, small-minded thinking they have or whatever they feel inadequate about. But on the flip side, you're with a woman you love. You're both funny. You both get to tour. You get to make albums. You get to come on podcasts. You get to go on TV shows. I mean, you know, from that perspective, your life's amazing and you're successful. Like, you know, do you have to do anything you don't want to do? The answer is probably no. Do you get to do the stuff you want to do? Yeah. Well, then you win already. Like, it's not.
I was just saying the wild thing right now is that I get to do stand up for a living and I also get to get married this year. Like, these are two things that I never thought would be possible for me. I mean, you always start and you think, like, maybe I'll get to do this, but you're also not really aware of, like, you'll get to do it on a national level. Like, you'll get to be on TV, you'll work hard enough and you'll hone your acting enough and you'll be good enough. Like, that's amazing. All of these things were not always possible for me. So I'm so jazzed to be here. We did it, guys. We did it.
Big question, though. Is Murph the Durf going to be a part of the wedding ceremony?
He's so animated all the time. We thought about bringing him to the wedding, but we realized he would have a heart attack and
die. More problems than his
wife. Yeah, he would be the poor little guy. He barks at each individual person, so I'm sure he would have a great time at a wedding.
Yeah.
I forgot about you. Like, just going through, greeting everybody.
Give him a radio show.
He's great. Yeah, you'll love him. He's the best. But you guys, this is a wonderful day to be doing this. Holy shit. What a day.
Yeah,
we perfect. Really scheduled that well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it works out.
Good job, America.
Too bad we weren't posting this today. We didn't have that much foresight.
That's okay. Don't worry.
But at least we still got to this date, Friday, June 26th, 2015.
Was the day we recorded this.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we adore you. And please let us know if we can do anything to help or anything you need.
Oh, guys, you already did it.
Great.
We had the greatest talk.
Okay.
And it was like an emotionally vulnerable talk with like some good laughs. There were some decent laughs, but
we
more
had
so
some good laughs.
Human being talk.
Human being talk, riffs, bits, emotional exposure. Mm-hmm. Exposing.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot of exposure.
The beauty of it.
Exposure.
Exposing. So, everyone, enjoy your rainbow burrito.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Nancy's love story could have been ripped right out of the pages of one of her own novels.
She was a romance mystery writer who happens to be married to a chef.
But this story didn't end with a happily ever after.
When I stepped into the kitchen, I could see that Chef Brophy was on the ground, and I heard somebody say, call 911.
As writers, we'd written our share of murder mysteries. So when suspicion turned to Dan's wife, Nancy, we weren't that surprised.
The first person they look at would be the spouse.
We understand that's usually the way they do it.
But we began to wonder, had Nancy gotten so wrapped up in her own novels?
There are murders in all of the books.
That she was playing them out in real life? You can listen to Happily Never After, Dan and Nancy, early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.